Outside of the influence of our parents, our friends probably will have the greatest impact on the direction that each of our lives take. Friendship can either make us or it can break us. Friends can help open doors for us. They can encourage us in times of discouragement. They can pick us up when we're down. They can offer words of wisdom, and they can offer direction to us in time of need. In Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20, the wise man said, "He who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm." You know, it's amazing how many kids today get into trouble because of their friendships. In fact, it's amazing how many adults today get into trouble because of their friendships. How many are on drugs today because they were introduced into those drugs by friends? How many commit sexual sin because of the circle of friends that they run with? How many stop going to church because of their friends? How many end up in jail because of the friends that they've chosen in life? Evil companions corrupt good morals. That's true. Listen again to Paul's strong words here regarding the friendships we choose in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning there in verse 14. He says, "Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? What does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God. As God has said, 'I will live with them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people.' Therefore, come out from them and be separate, says the Lord. Touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty." When he starts out there, he's telling these Corinthian Christians, he says, don't be yoked together with unbelievers. He draws on imagery from the Old Testament. And in fact, in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 22 and verse 10, there was a specific command about not yoking unequal animals together. There in that verse, it says, "Do not plow with an ox and a donkey yoked together." Now, unless you grew up on a farm and were around farm animals, you might not know the disastrous results that you would get from putting an ox in the same yoke as a donkey. In the Old Testament, an ox was a clean animal. A donkey was an unclean animal. So he chooses this imagery, and this would have come to mind immediately to these Corinthians as they read this. They saw animals yoked together. An ox is generally a hard-working beast of burden. An ox is a dependable creature, and you get two yoke of ox out there, and they'll pull a big wagon, and we've seen pictures of the Conestoga wagons that were pulled from east to west across this continent by oxen. But we all know the nature of a donkey. I mean, donkeys bite and they kick and they're stubborn and they're undependable. And you put a donkey on one side of the yoke and an ox on the other, and you may end up going in circles or having all kinds of problems. Now, he talks about a yoke, and again, we're not as familiar with that as past generations were. But a yoke is anything that ties two individuals together in close proximity. A close relationship that will move you in a direction that you possibly do not want to be moved in. Like the Christian who went into business with a friend. And as time went by, that friend began to be apparent that that friend was not someone who shared the same values as the Christian did. And he cut corners and he cheated on his taxes. And it creates a very difficult situation when you place yourself in a binding agreement with someone else, and then they begin to move in a direction with which you're uncomfortable. Paul says, don't form a close union. with someone who does not share your Christian values. Now, Paul asks a series of questions to underscore the difference, the very real difference between a Christian and someone who does not hold a Christian values. He asks, first of all, what do righteousness and unrighteousness have in common? Well, they have nothing in common. They can't coexist together equally. What fellowship does light have with darkness? Well, they're mutually exclusive. You bring a light into a dark room and it expels darkness. What harmony, he says, is there between Belial and Christ? Is there any harmony between the devil and Jesus? No. What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? I mean, they're moving in opposite directions. One offers praise to a living God. One offers praise to a dead God. And then he poses the question, his point in all of this, then what does a believer and an unbeliever have in common? Well, the answer to all those other questions is nothing. And the answer to this question is nothing. Therefore, he says in verse 17, come out from them and be separate. It's interesting that that's the very meaning of the word church, ecclesia. It means the called out, those who have come out to be separate from the world. Now, let me pause just a moment to state the obvious. You cannot avoid friendships with people who don't share your values. You can't do that. You can't live on the street where you live and socialize with your neighbors. You can't be in the business world and not rub shoulders with people who have morals that Christians shouldn't have. Paul had written earlier to this same group of Christians, and if you want to mark your place here in 2 Corinthians 6, back up to 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and notice what he has to say there, because he had written to them about their close associations with immoral people and people who were sexually impure. And he says there in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 9, I have written you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people. Not at all meaning the people of this world who are immoral or greedy and swindlers or idolaters. In that case, you would have to leave this world. But now I am writing you that you must not associate with anyone who calls himself a brother, but is sexually immoral or greedy, an idolater or a slanderer, a drunkard or a swindler. With such a man, do not even eat. He says you can't live in this world without being around people who are greedy and immoral. That's the nature of the world we live in. And you can't go through this life without having to have some kind of an association with folks like that. But what he's warning against here is forming strong alliances with non-Christians. That's a dangerous, dangerous thing for any Christian to do. It would include ties, the same kind of ties as yoking two animals together, ties like a business partnership, ties like strong, intimate friendship, ties like marriage. These are strong, binding ties. And he says, Christians, you have no business making this kind of deep, abiding alliance with someone who does not share your faith in Jesus Christ. Be very careful who you allow into your inner circle of close relationships. Now, I have had many friendships through my life, and every friend I've ever had falls into one of two categories. And it's the same for you. You have two kinds of friends as you go through life. You have good ones and you have bad ones. And you can probably remember some of both and can give me their names. Good ones have exerted an upward pull in my life. I've had friends that have made me a better person. I've had bad friends that have exerted a downward pull in my life. Paul says, seek out the kind of people as friends and as business partners and as potential mates who will make you a better person, who will draw you closer to God. In Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 17, it says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. One man wrote these words to his soulmate. He said, "I love you not for what you are, but for what I am when I am with you. I love you not only for what you have made of yourself, but for what you are making of me." Be with people who will make you better people. The true test of friendship is simply this, and ask yourself this question of your close friendships and associations. Am I a better person when I am around this individual? If you can't answer yes, then you need to move that friendship out to the level of casual friendship or even less. The most valuable possession that I have on the face of this earth would have to be my friends, more than anything else. My circle of friends is the greatest asset that I possess. It begins with my wife and with my family and with friends. And I have friendships because we've lived in other places around the world. I've got close friendships all around this globe. I've got close friendships right here within this church family. And they all have one thing in common. Every one of my close friends share my Christian values. Now, let me just say this. That doesn't mean that I agree 100% theologically or doctrinally with every person that I'm close friends with. I don't. But they all love the Lord, and they're all trying to do what I'm trying to do, and that is serve the Lord to the best of my ability. So my circle of friends is a wide circle of friends, but they all value what I value most in life. How can you identify those who you should develop into this kind of a close relationship? How do you see those? Well, let me tell you the characteristics of a true friend. A true friend is someone who is faithful to you. In Proverbs 17:17, it says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." In Proverbs 18:24, the wise man said, "There is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." You know, the prodigal thought he had a lot of friends when he went off into that far country and he began to buy all the rounds of drinks for everyone, and all the friends came out of the woodwork and they all wanted to be around him till the money ran out and then the friendships terminated. He was left to go and eat what the pigs ate. I know a friend is someone, it is said, when everybody else walks out on you, they'll come in. A second trait of friendships, a true friend will tell you the truth and they will confront you when you are wrong. I am grateful that I have had several people in my life over the course of the years who have come to me at times and they've said, "Joe, I think you're making a mistake," or "I think you're wrong," or they've challenged things that I've said. And I tell you, that is the greatest kind of friend to have, because if they correct me, then I can be right, and I want to be right, and I want to do what's best, and I want someone who cares enough about me to do what my parents did for me when I was young, and that's provide correction and new direction in my life. Some of you have friends who encourage you to do what is wrong. Let me tell you, those are not friends. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend." Now, real friends don't allow their friends to go down the wrong road and get into trouble. Now, the second most important friendship in my life is my wife. That's the second most important friendship that any of us will ever have, the one that we marry. And so, Paul is saying here and talking about not being yoked to unbelievers. If he's saying anything at all, he's saying, don't marry a non-Christian. That's the most intimate friendship you'll ever share. Can you imagine, as a Christian, going through life with someone that you can never even pray with? Can you imagine, as a Christian, going through life and the closest person to you is someone who can't even share the joy of your faith? Can you imagine going through life and having children, and the person that will have probably the greatest impact next to you is going to pull your children in a direction that would lead them away from Jesus rather than to Jesus? I am so grateful for my partner Vicki and I started out in college as close friends, and that friendship has just developed through the years. She keeps me on the right path. We share the joy of our faith together. We share the most important thing of all, our love for God and our desire to be together as a family one day with our children and our son-in-laws, and if we ever get them, grandchildren. We want to be together as family in heaven for all of eternity. And you know, to develop friendships, it's difficult. Someone has said, you know, it's easier to make enemies than friends because it doesn't take nearly as much work. And I think that's true. Developing and maintaining friendships requires work. It requires time and effort, and it requires follow-up and nurturing those friendships. And that's so important with our second most important friendship, our spouse. And Vicki and I periodically have to get away. This weekend, we had planned a trip, so we left. We went up to Kansas City and spent the night with our kids up there. And Vicki and I went down to the plaza, and we went in shoe stores shopping. Now, I don't like shoe stores, but I like Vicki. And so I go in shoe stores with her. And we spent time, and she loves that. And I didn't have any phone calls. There were no interruptions. And there were no sales. It was great. We came home with no shoes. But we've got to spend time nurturing our friendships and relationships. And that leads us to the single most important friendship that we will ever have. And that is our friendship with Jesus Christ. We sing the song, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." And that is so true. You'll never have a better friend than He is. Turn over for just a moment to the Gospel of John, chapter 15. There in verse 15, John 15:15, this is what Jesus said. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. He says, you did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command, love one another. Back in verse 13 of that same chapter, Jesus had said, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. I have never been called upon to do that. I've never had to call upon anyone to do that. The only one who's ever demonstrated that tangibly, visibly, in reality, is Jesus Christ in my life. He has laid down his life for me, and he's done it for you. He longs to be our friend, and he is the best friend that we'll ever have. In Revelation chapter 3 and verse 20, there is that beautiful picture, and yet in some ways tragic picture, of Jesus standing on the outside of a dwelling, knocking on the door. And he says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. And if anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person, and they with me. He's knocking and he's calling. And I can't think of anything more tragic than to have Jesus standing on the outside of my house, knocking on my front door and saying, Joe, Joe, it's Jesus, don't you hear me? Joe! And knocking in my continued refusal to open the door and allow him in. You know, Jesus does that for all of us. He doesn't love all of us. He loves each of us. And he comes to each of our abodes, and he seeks entrance, and he wants to share that kind of intimate table fellowship with us. Many of you this morning already know the joy of his friendship. Many of you years ago opened the door of your heart and you allowed him in, and you have been developing that wonderful, eternal relationship with him that will go on and on and on. But for others here today, he is still standing on the outside. He's still knocking. He's still calling your name. And for some unimaginable reason, there are people who never open the door and never let him in. This morning, as we talk about friendship and try to develop and be discerning in the friends we allow into the inner circle, I'm sure there must be some here that need to allow Jesus to take preeminence in their life. If he's knocking on your door, he seeks entrance, and he says, if you love me, you'll obey me. And he's clearly said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He's told us the terms by which we enter in. If you need to do that, we encourage you to do it today as we stand and as we sing.